10 and 11. Step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And 11 is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for His knowledge, for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So, Walt, I'd like to invite you up now.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Walt.
Hi, Walt.
It's interesting on the 10th step because for me, I've had to use it a lot this week for some reason. You know, I had a water heater blow up, and I had a last week coming home from here, I had a blowout on the highway and had to deal with roadside assistance. And then one of my sponsees got drunk, and there was a lot of things going on. And then, you know, I got this little part-time job, so somebody else got kind of a promotion, and like, it wasn't even something I wanted, but my ego got hurt, you know, and I don't even care, you know. But my ego got hurt. And the funny thing about that is I didn't say anything, because normally that wouldn't have been me. I didn't say anything to anybody except for my boss was away on training, so I went up to him today afterwards, and I said to him, you know, Matt, did I do something wrong? He goes, well, no. I said, well, what's going on about this? He goes, well, the fact is you're getting a better promotion pretty soon, so I figured you'd be gone, so you didn't need it. And I'm like, oh, no. Okay, whatever. You know. So when we trust God and we can shut up and stay out of the way once in a while, good things kind of happen, you know. But see, what I believe is that the 10th step takes all of the first 9 steps and rolls them in a little ball. And so for me, every day I've got to kind of unravel that ball. And for me, and when I'm doing a 10th step, I kind of do a little bit of meditation, and I've got to say, okay, what's bothering my soul today? What's bothering me? And I have to start there and go, okay, what's making me not happy? What's making me uncontent? What didn't go my way? What do I got to look at? Because what the most important thing that the first 9 steps should have taught me is a set of chosen ideals that I want to live by, and not the ideals that the world has taught me, who I want to be. Now, if I've come out of that with that, because when you look at your 4th step in that 4th column again, remember that pesky 4th column there? You see, in that thing, when we come out of that, we come out of it with some ideas of maybe what we did wrong and maybe how we ought to do things better in the future. In the 12 and 12 calls it a set of chosen ideals. So if I choose these ideals of how I want to live, and I understand the character defects and shortcomings are where I can't do that at this moment, and then if me not living the way I want to live has hurt other people, maybe I ought to do an 8th and a 9th step on that, right? And so I can do that all in a 5-minute period. And the best part about this is I don't have to wait till nighttime to do that. Okay? Anytime I feel disturbed, I can take a second anywhere I am in my life and say, excuse me for a minute, and go check myself so that I can get centered again by saying, okay, what's disturbing me? Why is it disturbing me? What am I afraid of? Where are my fears? Because that's all the 10th step really is about taking an inventory of where our fears are that day. If you truly believe in the big book, you see, nowadays it's questionable. I got a friend who says, you know, I know this guy who's sponsor, he ain't read the big book. And his sponsor ain't read the big book. And his sponsor ain't read the big book. See, he's a double know-nothing sponsor. You know? Because it's amazing how well this program works for some people, even on the peripherals, and they don't even get what it's really about. They don't understand what the fourth dimension, they look at that and laugh. You see, the stent step is the thing that really starts to move me to that fourth dimension of existence. It's the step that can really change the way I live. Because as I become more sensitive and pray and ask God to remove these things from me, if they block me from being useful to God, He will remove them. He will remove them. But they got to block me from being of usefulness to God. That doesn't mean all my character defects go away. I'm human. You know, it's nature to fall short. A lot of people would say sin. I use the word fall short. I think they mean the same thing. Because if I fall short of my chosen ideals, I feel pain in my soul. I feel uncomfortable. Wow. And this is where we use the 10th step to start to get in touch with that. To start every day starting to look at, where was I good? Where was I not so good? Where can I tweak this a little bit to maybe make me happier? Maybe make me be a little better person? How can I not worry so much about me and worry more about you? You see? I still never forget, you know, sitting at breakfast with this guy, and this guy, world famous, his name was Zig Ziglar. Real famous. He's a Baptist preacher. But he was a master salesman. Best of the best. And he looks across to me at the table. And I said, Zig, what's the secret to all this stuff? What's the secret to all this stuff? Now, he had nothing to do with AA. He said, well, you got to help enough other people get what they want, and you'll get what you want. Wow. What a concept. What a concept for a drunk like me, a selfish, brash, harsh guy. You know, and now I got to start helping other people get what they want so I can get what I want out of life. And the 10th step really, really helped me on that, because I truly say today that my biggest sins aren't the sins of commission, meaning the sins of where I do something wrong, I steal from you, I rob from you, I cheat you, those kind of things. Those aren't the things I have to deal with today on a daily basis. Not perfect, I don't have to deal with them on a daily basis, okay? It's more of the times when I could have helped that new guy at a meeting, or I could have stopped when somebody had an accident, or I could have gone out of my way for a friend who was sick, and I didn't. And those are the things that weigh more on my soul today. You see, those are the things that make me uncomfortable at night, that don't allow me to sleep well sometimes. You see, and that's something that has developed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old timers talked about this. If you read in the old literature, they talk about when a new guy comes to a meeting, we're supposed to teach him there's a value here. Wow. That there's something valuable here. That there's a price to be paid for sobriety. Just like there was a price to be paid for drinking. You see? There's a price to be paid. These seats aren't free. May not cost you any money, but they're not free. And so they taught me to teach the new guy that there's a value here, so that value in Alcoholics Anonymous is the thing where I go to a meeting and I say, how can I find somebody to help? Not how can I find my best friend and talk with him for a half an hour after the meeting while a guy walks out the door and commits suicide that night and we don't even know. Don't even know. Those are the things that bother me. You see, because I was taught that I have a tall responsibility to call myself a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, it wasn't something that you just come and sit in a meeting, because in the meetings I went to back then, they told you to get out if you weren't serious. We don't need you, you need us. And that's important to remember, and we've lost that somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of it. To make this something special, it's like all of a sudden we think everybody should just come here, sit around and have a coffee clutch, and oh yeah, that's the big book, let's dust it off maybe once a month or something. And they wonder why the results in Alcoholics Anonymous have fallen off. You see, if we don't have a program of attraction, if we don't have the ability to take this 10th step and put it into somebody's life so they find so much value in that working of that step that it changes their life in a miraculous way, what are we doing here? Why are we wasting our time all these years? If I can't do that and create a miracle in somebody else's life, I've wasted my time. Because I've spent too many hours in Alcoholics Anonymous, too many nights, too many days going to 5 meetings a day, leading 3 meetings in a day. Too many hours. And if God can't use me at this point to create miracles in other people's lives, I've wasted my time. Because I haven't worked the 10th step consistently to refine myself, to understand myself, to understand the inner workings of this insanity of the brain of an alcoholic. You see. And I don't like wasting my time. I love to see miracles happen in AA. I love it. It's the best thing I think that can happen to me in life, is to see a miracle in Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether I'm a part of it or not, it makes me feel great to see somebody come here torn, tattered, not taking a shower in a month, and all of a sudden, a few weeks later, they're there and they're walking around shaking hands and they don't smell anymore. And maybe a month later they have a car. You know, in another month they knock on their neighbor's door and say, "Hey, I got to tell you, man, all my utilities are out at the same time," you know? Right? Like it makes a big deal. But only an alcoholic would understand that. You see, utility roulette was fun. It's important what we do here. It's important that we take a look at ourselves. It's important that we understand how we work so that we can give it to somebody else. You see? And I don't understand this thought in Alcoholics Anonymous that somebody has to be here for a period of time to help somebody else. I just don't understand it. Everybody can help another guy. Believe me, when a guy walks through this door and it's his first day at AA, a guy with 7 days sober is a long time. They might be able to believe that. Me telling him I'm sober 37 years, he's going to say, "You don't even know what drinking is. You're a quitter." And I believe that with all my heart. That you have to teach the new guy right from the beginning. This is what we do. The only thing we have, the only thing that will ensure sobriety, the only thing the big book says is only one thing. It's helping another drunk. And it doesn't just say helping another drunk. It says intensive work with another alcoholic. Intensive. Wow. So when I do my 10th step, I've got a lot of activity in it. You see? Because that means sometimes at weird times, I have to make phone calls to make amends to people I harmed. And I have to be able to be humble enough to say I make mistakes. And I have to make sure the world around me is calm enough but I can live in it free. That's hard for me. It's real hard. I love chaos. I love excitement. If I didn't, why would I grow a business that grew over 1,000% 4 years in a row? That's insanity. That's insanity. They gave me awards for it. I laugh at that today. It's like, yeah, I got the award for the most insane boss. Wow. I pushed my people harder than anybody else, I guess, you know. A lot of regrets there, I'll tell you. The fact is, though, I never ask anybody to do something I wouldn't do myself. But I have insane levels of life. When my sponsor told me they absolutely insist we enjoy life, I believe that. I believe that. You know? And when I do a 10th step and look back at my life today, and my soul's not crazy anymore. I can look back at it and say, yeah, I did okay. I did okay. Traveled the world. I had a wonderful wife for 20 years. I got two wonderful boys. I had a great company. I've had a lot of experiences in AA. I've had great sponsorship and friends. And man, I've done okay. If I go today, I'd be okay. You know? And that's an important place to be. I wasn't there for a long time. And it's through the 10th step of constantly looking at ourselves, constantly taking this ability with our interactions with other people, sober, because it's a little different when we're drunk. You know, knowing the rules sober is something we have to learn, and it's constantly changing all the time, especially in today's world with technology changing so fast, that we have to constantly look and say, you know, what kind of person do I want to be today? And that's really the question I ask myself for a 10th step. What kind of person do I want to be today? Do I want to live up to my chosen ideals, or do I want to fall short? And some days, I just don't have the intestinal fortitude to live up to my chosen ideals. Doesn't mean I drink. It just means that when I do things that aren't up to my chosen ideals, then I generally don't feel too good about it afterwards. And in the moment, though, I think it's this instant gratification. It's going to make me feel great. You know, it's like I've been on this diet for a few months, and it's like, man, a piece of cake would look wonderful. And it would taste great for a second. But an hour later, after that sugar rush has started to wear off, and the headache comes on, and I just feel lousy, you know. What do I want to live like? I don't want to live like that no more. You know? Life's hard no matter what. You got to pick your heart. You know? When you let the world pick your heart, that's when you have troubles, because you're always going to fight against it. Always going to fight against it. So, meditation. Well, the key to me of the 11th step is really understanding the first 9 steps again, like 10 is. Because when I meditate, I want to find out what's blocking me from God. Because I want to get closer to God. And so a lot of times when I'm doing my meditation, I'm really trying to get in touch with my soul and quiet my body down enough so that I can listen to the softer tones that make it through to tell me about discomfort. Because I don't have the big stabbing pains today like I used to that were so obvious. You know, like if your soul's like a ball when it's perfect and you're born, mine got pretty bumpy as I got a little older there, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taken those bumps and kind of smoothed them out a little bit, you know. And God's removed some of that stuff. And so now to get to the finer things and the easier things, I have to get more quiet. And the quietness isn't the quietness around me. I could meditate at a rock concert. You see, the quietness is in my soul. You see, I have to quiet myself enough to be able to listen to myself so that I can hear God talking through my soul. And that's a hard thing to get to, because to do that, we have to be living in the way that our soul wants us to live. So we have to be living by our own ideals, by our own values, by our own morals. We have to be living to be that person that God made us to be. You see, again, getting back to this great story from Denny Lawrence. I mean, Denny was wonderful. Some of you might know him. He's from Youngstown. And he told the story. I told it before, but I'll tell it real quick again. He said, you know, when I grew up, I was an orange. I was a pretty good orange. But as I started to grow up and started to go through school, I realized that I didn't like oranges, that I like bananas. And so I wanted to be around bananas. And so I started changing the way I looked and places I went and the way I talked, and I started to become a good banana on the outside. Well, guess what? As soon as bananas got close to me, because I started attracting them, they found out I was an orange, and bananas don't like oranges. They like bananas. And they go away. And that's the way I kind of lived my life, is that I was the person that God made me to be wasn't hip enough, slick enough, or cool enough, and I had to change it. I had to change it. You know, and for me, it was, you know, the early 70s, the late 60s, and, you know, change was about everything then, you know, and there was such a revolution in culture, way worse than it is now, way worse. It's bad now, but then it was crazy, but I had to break my values and morals then. And I knew it because I felt it. You see. And to get back to those are where we want to get back to. That childlike faith, to those values that God made in us. And once we do, once we identify those and understand them, through the 11th step, we can align ourselves with God. And we can really get centered with God so that we can be happy each day. Sober happy. And that's a hard place to get to. You see? Because to me, most of my early sobriety wasn't real happy. You know? I did a lot of grinding. And it wasn't grinding because I wanted to drink. It was grinding because I didn't know the rules of sobriety. I didn't know how to act around people. Hell, my first home group made me sit like 10 feet away from anybody in the group. There's 300 people there. I had to sit way over on the side because they didn't trust me not to make a problem during the meeting. Thank God they told me like it was. Thank God they set standards for me. God, you do that in a meeting now and 30 people jump on you. Oh, how could you do that to them? They need a participation trophy so they can go drink again. Jesus. We're talking about life or death here. It's serious business to me. It's not about playing around. If I drink again, I die. I know that. There's no more recoveries for me. This is the last stop. And I treat it that way. I treat it that seriously. It's just like if the doctor looked at me and said, you got cancer, you're going to die in a week. But in a week, if you don't eat sugar all week, you won't die. You might get another day. Oh, really? Well, maybe I won't eat sugar this week. Okay? I mean, as an alcoholic, they'd tell us that and we'd do it anyways. Most times. It doesn't matter. So, if I've worked the steps properly, I get to the 10th step, I know who I'm supposed to be, not who I am, who I want to be. And in the 11th step, as I start to listen to God, I start to think about the ways I can change my life so that I won't feel uncomfortable in my soul. And that can be anything. Because at this point in my sobriety, the thing that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me back, the thing that alcohol stole from me, the things that drugs stole from me, were my dreams. And see, in the 11th step, it allows me to dream. It allows me to move ahead and dream. Somehow Zoom got knocked out. So, if I can dream again, now I can create my life to get to those dreams, right? And that's the beauty of AA. Because constantly as we're going through sobriety, we're reevaluating who God made us to be. We're constantly getting closer to that person. And as we do, we're getting more rewards. It's amazing. It's amazing. And those rewards come because we have bigger dreams and different dreams. And, you know, look, I could go to Hollywood and try to sell a script to these guys about a guy that grew up in South Florida, got in the drug business, ended up homeless, came to Cleveland, Ohio with a river on fire, became a millionaire, married a wife, had two boys that turned out well. Now, that doesn't make sense. That don't happen. That's not normal. And it's so important to understand what's not normal is. Because that's a miracle. That's weird that would happen. You see? Those are the stories in Alcoholics Anonymous we need to understand. We need to give these new people dreams again. We need to show them there's no more limitations in life. All those limiting behaviors they've had, they don't need to live with anymore. We can break every one of those limiting behaviors through the 10th and 11th steps. Every limiting behavior I've come up against in my sobriety, whether it was going back to college, whether it was quitting a six-figure job at 40 years old to start a company that I'd never owned a company, never even been a manager before. I've been a salesman my whole life. And to grow that business into something that was special, that's God. That's the 12 steps, and that's the power of the 12 steps. One of my best friends, he's my hero, kind of. He got sober about 5 years before me. And Dale was a Hell's Angel enforcer. He's a real bad guy. And at 28 years old, he got sober. And his sponsor was able to finagle a job at Lubrizol, mopping floors, third shift. Third shift, that's all he could get. And he got into Lubrizol, right? When Dale retired 5 years ago, he was international director of IT for Lubrizol. That don't happen. That don't happen. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what fires up my juices. That's why I come to these meetings. That's what I want today. And it's our responsibility, every one of us in this room, to make sure that that new person, when they walk through the door, understands what we have. You see? It's our responsibility, anytime, anywhere. Not when it's convenient, not when it's easy, because probably you didn't get sober at 3 p.m. either. I know I didn't. You see, and I carry this responsibility in my heart every day. And I have a debt of gratitude that I need to pay to all those old timers that taught me so well, that gave me life. You know, and it's like every time I talk on the phone to my children, I just am so grateful for those old timers. Because those boys would not have come up the way they are now. They would have been out in the street doing what they do on the streets. And God didn't see fit for that. I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed. So, dream dreams. Think big. There's nothing that limits us except for our thoughts. Nothing limits us but our thoughts. Every time I've had a limiting behavior, it's been a fear. And what's the big book say? We must be rid of fear or it will kill us. We have to go for our dreams in sobriety. To find happiness, to find the fourth dimension, we have to excel. The highest earning population in the world is sober alcoholics. And that's because we're all overachievers when we get sober, most of us. I'd say about 90% of us are. And I know when I had my company, I surely wanted sober members AA working for me because they were hard workers. So I probably talked enough. It's 6:10 and that's my orders. And I actually do it in the first couple weeks. I got a little full of myself, but I can follow orders in time. You know, I'm a slow learner and a quick forgetter, but you know, I'll do okay. Time for some questions, I guess.
All right. Thanks, Walt. Did you say we lost Zoom at some point?
I think so. An unknown error occurred, it says.
Well, if anybody here in the room has a question for Walt, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll bring you the microphone. And he'll answer that for us. So.
Sorry about that if
no.
I did something.
No, I don't think so.
Ryan's going to see if we can get Zoom back online.
It's because we don't have any internet. So.
Okay. That'll do.
All right.
Great. All right, so who would like to get us started? All right.
Hey, Walt, thanks so much for coming over and seeing us tonight. Really appreciate it. So you mentioned in talking about the 10th step, you can do it really any time in the day that you're disturbed or otherwise, it might be a good idea. My question is, when you're working with people, do you offer them like any sort of a tool or a guide for them to do their own 10-step, whether it's reference to the big book or 12 and 12 or any other sort of tool, how you might coach them along on their 10-step?
Well, absolutely. The big book is always the king, okay? And you know, the big book says, you know, for the 10th step specifically to do it in the evening. But as I've grown, I've found it very valuable to use it other times during the day also. So anytime we're afraid, we can go to the steps. The key is for us to learn when we're afraid. Because most of us have no idea that we're afraid when we get here or what fear really is. I surely didn't. I thought I was a tough guy that nothing made me be afraid. Well, I was a tough guy because I was so afraid. Okay. You know, so you got to understand there's all these gives and takes. But for me, the whole key is to get somebody looking at themselves and saying, wow, how do I do better tomorrow? How do I start this process of saying, okay, I want to be a better man than I was? And each day to look at it and say, okay. And you start building it with blocks. Now, my problem is that if you get into these outside guides and all these formulas and crap, some people find value in them. To me, I find them limiting because they kind of put you in a box. Every single one of them I've ever seen really have limiting parts to it. And so if I want to live an unlimited life, if I want to live all that God has for me, I need to stop the limiting behaviors. And that's where if you can get in touch with your own feelings, you can feel what's right and what's wrong in your heart. I haven't found a drunk yet that's come to AA that can't do that. Okay? And so if you can learn to listen to your heart, I find I live a lot better. You know? I just am nicer to people and I just am a better guy. So that's kind of where I start with them in the 10th step, is that it's really about getting in touch with this and feeling when we've done things that maybe weren't up to our own standards. Not your standards or my standards, but your own. Thank you.
Who else has a question?
Hey, Walt, thanks again. That was great.
Thank you.
I have a question for you on kind of maybe a related topic. You spoke on meditation, and you were talking, the example you gave was irrespective of the surroundings. You could be at a rock concert, I think you said, and still find, still be able to meditate.
Yep.
Within.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking a lot about the concept of serenity, which is something that's near and dear to AA. And I'm just wondering if you might share some of your thoughts on that, what that means to you, or how that's developed for you personally, maybe.
It's fleeting. I'm an alcoholic. I love chaos. Okay? For some reason, I've always created chaos. And you know, I'm a bull in a china shop, and that's kind of where I'm comfortable, you know? Serenity is more to me, if I define it in my life the way I live today, not by just words, but by my life. I've got this serenity about the pattern and the discipline I have today. Because I spend a lot of time in the gym, I spend a lot of time lifting weights, I spend a lot of time with new people. I just have this pattern of really good place the last couple of years with all this weight loss and really feeling a lot younger. I mean, I feel younger than I did 30 years ago. And it's really because of the discipline that I was able to achieve and to constantly look at each day. And really, I do a 10th step every morning when I get up and I go, okay, who do I want to be today? What are my goals? What are my values? Where am I going? I plan my gym time. I got this little part-time job now. So I have things during my time now more than I did, but it's still the discipline on a daily basis. And I break it down just to today. And when I am able to keep that consistent discipline without all kinds of chaos, I'm a lot more serene. I'm a lot nicer, you know. And not that I'm mean by any most people's standards, but by my standards today, I'm not as nice as I could be. You see, and I'm learning a lot more about being nice. It's a value.
Any other questions?
You know, it's kind of nice at my little part-time job at Sherwin-Williams. Everybody that comes into the paint store that's like a DIY customer, they're so happy because either they just bought a house, they're selling their house, they just put on an addition, you know, and they're all excited. And it really gives me faith in humanity again, because you see the excitement in them. They're bringing their kids, their dogs in the store and stuff. And it's just, it's an uplifting place for me to be right now. And so it's good. It's not even about the money or anything. It's about the time and the experience and just, you know, having more to do than just sitting in the house. So, you know, and going to meetings. I mean, I go to a lot of meetings still even. I go to probably 6 meetings a week right now. So, I owe. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Walt. So, you talked about being nice to people, and I know you help a lot of people. What is your criteria where you fire a sponsee?
I've never done
don't
that.
Get any,
I've never done
safe.
That. I don't fire sponsees.
Okay.
You see, because I believe sponsorship is made in heaven. I believe that God brings his people to sponsor. Now, if I'm going to fire him, what am I telling God? Hey, F you, God? Okay. If God sends somebody in my life, now, I may be strict enough, and I may be disciplined enough that they don't want what I have anymore. And they might go away. But I don't have to tell them to go away. They just go away. Okay? And that's what the program's all about, though. Is I don't have to tell these guys to go away. There was a guy, look. A guy I sponsored for about 4 months. Doing phenomenal. We talked 3 times a day. He was going to 10 meetings a week. Helping others. Doing great. One night I was in a meeting, and a guy had brought up my political views to a new guy and told him that the new guy that he probably should be with me, not him, because of political views. That made me really angry, okay? And I got really angry at this guy, and he pushed me in a meeting, and it got a little bit, not quite physical, but it was heated. And I told him that an old guy might have a problem with that, you know? And the sponsor, he didn't like it at all, and he hasn't talked to me since. Okay? And, you know, I can appreciate he had some fear there, obviously. But he always tells everybody I was the best thing he ever had, and that I never told him a thing that was wrong. So, you know, I don't know where God's working in that situation. I know that I probably shouldn't have got as mad as I did. But, you know, once in a while, we all get a little more mad than we should have. There was three or four other things going on, and it was just a moment. And if I get judged by my worst moments, I'm in trouble. You know? I hope that somehow me coming out here for all these weeks is like doing a little bit of an amends for some of the things I do, you know? Because I'm still not perfect, and I don't have holes in my hands I don't claim to. But the thing you can always claim from me is that I'm honest, and I'll tell you the truth. Good or bad, because I, you know, all these years of sobriety have led me a long ways, but I've still got some flaws.
Thank you all.
You're so welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Walt. Eric, alcoholic.
Eric?
Once again, thanks for a great talk tonight. My question is the second half. Actually, it's not really a question. I was wondering if you had advice on the second half of step 10, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I have, like, I know in some instances with some people it's easy to go up and say, hey, I was wrong, but with others it's not so easy, so I kind of dodge.
Oh, the okay, topic. So God isn't good enough for you?
No, I mean, I'm...
Well, what are you saying? You're not disciplined enough to follow God?
My delivery isn't always the best.
So what? Are you good enough for God or are you not? Are you trusting God or are you not? You see, this isn't, I take this and pick that. If you feel bad in your soul about something you did, you owe an amends. And amends isn't saying I'm sorry, it's saying how do I make it right? Because we want to heal our soul. We're not doing this for the other guy. We're doing it for us. So every time you pass up on an amends, you're saying, F you to me. I'm not good enough to do the amends. I'm not good enough to be clean. I'm not good enough to live a godly life. It's all about what you want, man. You can stay where you're at forever and always have that conflict. Because I'm sure when you realize it, it doesn't feel good. Does it?
No.
Oh. So just keep taking a little toothpick every day and stab yourself 100 times in the hand, okay? Just keep doing that every day. That's what you're doing. I mean, it's the truth. I'm not trying to be strict or anything, but I'm just trying to tell you that if you don't feel good, if it's limiting your happiness, what are we supposed to do with limiting behaviors? We're supposed to get rid of them because they're fears. Right? Wow.
I like to hear other people say it.
I understand, but remember, when you don't do that, it's because you're afraid, not because you don't want to. You have to deal with your fear. Each of us have different fears. That's why the book says there's 1,000 forms of fear. You've got to understand that each and every one of us, the whole 12 steps is about fear. It's about teaching us how to live with fear so that we can have a freer life. All right? And that's what AA is all about, is to be living a better life. Why come here if we're not living better? I mean, really, I'll go back to the bar. If I didn't find value here, I wouldn't be here, pal. All right? Neither would you. You know? Just remember, when your toe's in the water, guess what happens and how it works? What's it say? Half measures avail us what? It doesn't say half the program, does it? So every time you do that, you think you might be in risk of taking a drink? Is it worth it? Would it be worth taking a drink over not saying I'm sorry? Not saying how can I make it right? I think I did something that I didn't want to do? I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse or make you feel bad, but I do. Because I want you to quit it, because you'll be happier. You see? I want to encourage you to feel that pain every time you do it. And to understand that maybe that's not the way you want to live. And then what do you do with that? You take it to God and pray about it, right? You can't change it. You can make the amends, but you pray about it. And you say, God, this thing's become a difficulty for me. I feel like it's blocking me from you. Can you remove it from me? You see, the book's all laid out. It's so clear. It's so perfect. It's just we don't have the courage to fight our fears to really read it. It took me a lot of years to fight my fears to be able to open up the black part of that book and truly read it in spite of fear. You see? So don't beat yourself up too bad, but at the same time, you need to beat yourself up. Because the big book talks about us being beaten into reasonableness. That's my theme. I'm always getting beaten into reasonableness. You see? And that's what's happening to you, is every time you do that, you feel a little more pain. And it'll build up over time, and all of a sudden you'll be beaten into reasonableness. Imagine that. The book's phenomenal, man. I love the book. I'm sorry. I read the book every single day. Those 164 pages mean more to me than anything. It's been a roadmap for my life. Thank you.
Any other quick questions?
You might have a quick question, but I want to have a quick answer.
Well, it looks like that does it, so thank you all.